Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is the Pony Express.
I mean, you don't win without that competitiveness and that killer instinct and finding different ways to win games and different styles. And tonight, and as of late, obviously with KD out, it's those other, you know, I call them the other guys, but they know who they are. Like, step foot on the floor and play with confidence. Quinn was tremendous in that first, you know, four to 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. Decisive, getting to his spots, making plays. You know, JB all night, stepping up. You know, Alonzo hit a big shot in the corner. You know, hit a big three for. So everybody, when they step foot on the floor, know they can help us play. Got to play that way, shorthanded, and, you know, doing it by committee and having each other's back. It requires a certain amount of toughness to do that, for sure.
And that's Steph Curry taking the high road on Kevin Durant's absence. By committee approach, we're shorthanded. Those are the things a team leader says after they win a game with a star player on the bench, unavailable, in Kevin Durant. But we know that's not the truth. That the Warriors are a better team without Durant than they are with him. The record, the numbers, the production from Warriors players backs that up. And their history even backs that up. What they did, winning 73 games in 2016 and winning the NBA championship without Durant in 2015. And we're going to start this hour with a proposal I have for the Warriors and a thought I have for them that I don't know if I've really heard articulated yet. And I'm going to make that case today from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. The Pony Express, CBS Sports Radio, cbssportsradio.com, the radio.com app, Sirius XM Channel 206, all our local affiliates. If you're listening online, or if you're listening on an app, you can search at cbssportsradio.com a list of affiliates and find out where the local stations are. You know, contact local radio stations in your market and tell them you want the show. Tell them you want them to carry the show. Would really appreciate that. And I want to just say this about the Warriors and the situation they find themselves. This is one of those good problems, as they say, moving forward. You know, one of the main advantages they have in terms of keeping Kevin Durant, if they're so inclined, is that they can offer Durant more money and they can offer him an extra year. They can offer an extra year and they can offer an extra $60 million for him. So in that respect, it's a win-win. The best team in the league can give you the most job security, the most financial security, keep you over the other candidates and contenders and clubs that are vying for your services. But here is the issue with the Warriors this offseason. If they wait for Kevin Durant, maybe they lose Klay Thompson. And I would not want to risk that. Because when Steph Curry is out of the lineup, the Warriors are a 500 team. When Durant's out of the lineup, they are 29-1. So unlike the Oklahoma City Thunder a few years ago, the Warriors' future does not hang on Kevin Durant's decision. If Kevin Durant walks, it's not a setback for the Warriors. In fact, it allows them to get back to their roots, and it allows them to go back to being the team they were when, frankly, they were a likable team, when they were a fun team, when they weren't a creation of modern-day free agency, where they weren't a stacked team. I mean, they were still great, but they were homegrown and guys who were drafted and developed. You know, the Warriors didn't buy championships with those guys. It was shrewd drafting, smart development, being on the cutting edge, knowing, figuring out that basketball was moving into a new era of play. Fun and gun, shoot a lot of threes, find the best shooters. They drafted two of the five best shooters in NBA history, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. And we see with Durant, there's not enough basketballs to go around. They play a lot of isolation ball. They're so talented, they still beat teams. From a basketball fan perspective, it's not as aesthetically pleasing to watch them win with Durant, and the team clearly functions better without him. So here's what I would do. And this is controversial, and I don't know if I've heard anybody else say this, but whatever, I'll put my name on it. If I got to be the first one to the moon on it and put the flag in the ground and say this is my take, fine. If I'm the Warriors, I don't offer Kevin Durant a contract. And he's probably going to leave anyways. But I wouldn't make the option for a return available to him either. Just let him go. You know, teams do that in other sports all the time with star players. You know, smaller market teams in sports where there aren't a salary cap have to watch guys leave in free agency. Baseball is a clear example of this, knowing that they can't maintain that player's services because they've priced themselves out of a market. It happens. And teams move on. You know, you trust your process, you trust your system. A great baseball example of that is St. Louis with Albert Pujols. All right. You're a great player, but you're an all-time great player. You're a Hall of Famer. You're a first ballot Hall of Famer, but if we commit $40 million to you, we're going to have a hard time building a complete team. We see that in football where decisions are made. You can't allocate or dedicate X amount of dollars to one position because there's not enough money to go around. So if I'm the Warriors, I don't even give Kevin Durant that option. I go right to Klay Thompson and say, we believe in you. Durant's gone. It's this, the three-headed monster that we had from the very beginning. You, Curry, and Draymond Green, we're going to continue to build around that. And I would not give Durant the option of coming back. And honestly, that is in Durant's best interest now. Because in order for Kevin Durant now to get remembered with the Steph Currys and LeBron Jameses and Dwayne Wades, Dirk Nowitzki, these Hall of Famers who won championships from this recent run of basketball history, in order for Durant to be in that inner circle, in order to be a member of that club, he's got to go to a place like the Knicks and win. I've got a story in front of me from Newsday, from the NBA Draft Combine. Title of the piece. This is from last night. It went to press. Kevin Durant to Knicks. That's all NBA execs could talk about at NBA Draft Combine. They're acting like it's a done deal. This is what it says. One front office executive said that Durant has been unhappy with the prodding from Steve Kerr and the feeling that he can be, no matter how great he performs and how many individual honors he compiles, the centerpiece of a team that holds Steph Curry in the hearts of the franchise. It's not just in the hearts of the franchise. It's not just something that's based on emotion or sentimentality. The numbers, the record suggest that Steph Curry is far more important to the Warriors than Kevin Durant. When Durant is the lead dog, when he's the top dog, they're an average team. The numbers back that up. Per 48 minutes, with Durant on the court and no Curry, they're 1 point better than the opposition. With Curry out there and no Durant, they're 12 points better. It's night and day. It's not even close. So Durant's got to go. And I think the Knicks are the perfect destination for him because in many ways it sets up like LeBron's return to Cleveland. LeBron goes to Cleveland. He's got unfinished business there. He was proclaimed the king at a very young age, and he got the Cavaliers close, but for a city that hadn't won a championship since 1956. He was the chosen one who was going to come back and create a memory for generations of Cleveland sports fans. And he did that. He fulfilled that promise. Now, Kevin Durant's from Washington, D.C. Didn't grow up a Knicks fan to the best of my knowledge. But there is no team, maybe in professional sports, that is hungrier for a championship team than the New York Knicks. The Knicks' last championship was in 1973. It's been 6 years since they made the playoffs. The Knicks have one playoff series victory in 19 years. Think about that. 16 teams in a 31-team league or 30-team league make the playoffs every year. So more than half the league makes the playoffs. And the Knicks have one playoff series victory in 19 years. In 2013, they beat the Celtics in six games. I can't remember anything from that series. I know that was a Carmelo Anthony team. That's about it. The Knicks' best player in the last 20 years is Allen Houston. Allen Houston. So go there and go play in an arena, in a facility that is synonymous with great basketball, even though the home fans have not been treated to much of that in the last 50 years. And that would, to me, that would complete the Kevin Durant story. That would become the most impressive accomplishment of his career. Go to New York, get them to NBA superiority. Get them to the top of the mountain. Get them into conference finals. Make a finals appearance. Win a championship. And if Durant does that, then these questions I have about his place among the great basketball players of all time, it would all go away. Because he took the easy way out going to Golden State for starters. We've learned that he is a luxury item, that he's not a necessity, and that the team actually functions better without him. Durant thought when he went to Golden State that winning championships, because that's what we obsess about so much, we rank guys more on team accomplishment than individual accomplishment. Durant thought this was a way for him, a shortcut to going down as one of the best players in NBA history, and the opposite has happened. The Warriors became one of the most polarizing teams in the NBA. They lost a lot of fans because they had stacked the deck. They had created a super team. We love underdog stories. We don't root for the team that won because they spent money or they went and poached a player from another team. You build a championship team naturally, we give you credit. If you cheat and you cut corners, we don't. And that's what Golden State did, and that's what Durant did. So he'll never get the respect he thinks he deserves playing there. That's why he's got to go to the Knicks. And if I'm the Warriors, I make it easy for him and say, look, we're not going to offer a contract. We're going with Clay. Good luck with your future endeavors. And just wash your hands of the guy. And don't even let him on July 1st contemplate and vacillate over multiple offers. That's my advice. Move on. It's best for basketball. It's best for the Warriors. And it's best for Kevin Durant for everybody to go their separate way. All right, coming up next. I've been in countdown mode all day. Tonight is one of the biggest nights in television history. There's a big crossover audience between this television spectacle tonight and the American sports fan. And I want to discuss that with all of you next. You can follow me on Twitter at the Pony Express, Pony spelled P-O-N-I. You can follow us on Twitter at CBS Sports Radio. I'm here 10 to 2 Eastern, 7 to 11 Pacific every Sunday. It's the Pony Express on CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Pony Express.
All right. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, and it's brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. You'll have somewhere between 7 and 10 million people watching Game of Thrones tonight, the series finale on HBO. Most anticipated series finale since Breaking Bad. Before that, Sopranos probably. And I don't want to hear the Big Bang Theory, okay? Like, I'm not talking about sitcom television. I'm talking about real TV, these hour-long dramatic masterpieces that you get every week. Now, this season of Game of Thrones has been a dud for the most part, but they bounced back in a big, big way last week. Huge way. I mean, they were down in the on the scoreboard. They were like, for me, they were like the Warriors last night, where they were down 13 at the half and just had a gigantic third quarter to, you know, capture that game and take that game back and put an insurmountable lead on Portland's head. And that, I thought that was what happened with Game of Thrones in the penultimate episode. Riveting, captivating. It's not what everybody wanted. Maybe the plot twist with Daenerys going Mad Queen style on everybody was predictable, but some elements of it were not. And the total carnage and destruction of the episode, I don't know how you could have sat there and watched it and not liked it, or have been on the edge of your seat, just completely transfixed by it. If you're not, I think you're trying to find reasons to not like the show. And I said last week here that I had pretty much given up on it. And I'm happy. Yeah, they set the bar so low and my expectations have gotten so low that it made me appreciate last week for what it was way more. This whole intrigue over who is going to be on the Iron Throne, the king or queen, the ruler of Westeros at the end of this season, at the end of the show, has taken on a complete life of its own. You know, with sports betting becoming more and more popular, with so many of you in our listening audience now in states where betting is now legalized, you don't have to be in Las Vegas anymore to get down. You don't have to know a guy who has a kind of a shady enterprise and a friend of a friend and that whole business to put a bet down. This show's finale has coincided with the explosion, the proliferation of sports betting. And so there has been a ton of action on Game of Thrones props that have been created. And the biggest one being, who is going to end up the ruler of Westeros at the end of this thing? The New York Times actually has a story out on this today. The New York Times, you know, the newspaper of record, has a story out on all the betting action that's come in on this, with some really interesting points made in this article. The first one is that, I guess, and this cites an article from back in 2017 where an HBO executive made it seem like they shot multiple endings to the show. They didn't shoot one ending, but there are multiple endings, which conceivably, ostensibly could have been done to create some red herrings here. But I digress. I want to read this part for you. For now, the heavy favorite to rule Westeros is Bran, a.k.a. the Three-Eyed Raven. The closest to him in betting odds is Sansa, followed well behind by Gendry, Jon, and Tyrion. After her deranged bout of pyromania, Daenerys has slipped way back. Now, this is an article that was in the New York Times this morning. I'm going to read this paragraph to you. As of this writing, the line for Bran to rule Westeros stands at minus 450. That means that for every $450 bet, the profit for a win would be $100. It is the equivalent to 2-9 odds, meaning a lot of bettors are pretty certain Bran will sit on the throne. Let me put that in even greater perspective for sports fans. They are telling you in Vegas, the odds makers are saying, that Bran's odds of sitting on the Iron Throne are the equivalent are equal to Brooks Koepka winning the PGA Championship today. In the history of golf, no golfer has blown a 7-stroke lead on a Sunday at a major championship. The odds makers are saying if Brand is not on the throne at the end of the show, it would be equal to or equivalent to one of the biggest upsets in sports history. Next paragraph from the New York Times. Some bookmakers have cited suspicious patterns of betting, especially on Brand prevailing at the end. Last week, an Irish bookmaker suspended wagers after the odds on Brand shortened from 2-1 to 1-4 in the space of just 2 weeks. So there is a great deal of concern about information and leaks on how this show, Game of Thrones, will end, which, look, in the past, it's not a big deal, right? You just go out, you just try to ignore it. You figure out places where you're going to get spoilers, certain message boards online and Facebook and social media sites, and you just kind of barricade yourself in and bury your head in the sand and try to ignore these things. But really, who is it hurting if the ending gets out? It ruins the surprise, but it's not the end of the world. But now people are betting on it. And now there's liability out there where these bookmakers thought at the start of this, well, there is so much interest in this show, we're going to let people bet on it. Just like anything else, you can bet on political elections, presidential elections, gubernatorial elections. You can vote on how much money movies are going to make at box office. I mean, you can bet on all kinds of things now. And we've got more access to betting on these things today. But I think it is absolutely fascinating that now in 2019, there's all this action out there on Game of Thrones. And the leaks and information that are getting out there are affecting people's bottom lines, are throwing the bookmakers off, where they're now in a position where they think they're going to lose a ton of money, or they got to either put crazy odds out there or shut off bets on something that, if you're a fan of the show like myself, Game of Thrones, you've been speculating and trying to predict who's going to be the winner for the last 4 or 5 years. Who's going to be on the throne in the end? And they're telling you, the odds makers are saying, it's like 99.99999% certainty that Bran Stark is going to be the guy. I want to get your thoughts on this. 855-212-4227. Game of Thrones theories. Because look, you might laugh at that. Andrew, what are you doing? I'll tell you this. More people today and tonight will watch the Game of Thrones finale than Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals, Blue Sharks. I think the rating is going to be close to Game 3 of Raptors Bucks on TNT, and because of the lack of competition at the PGA Championship, I know it's on over-the-air TV, CBS, but I would even be curious, Game of Thrones finale versus PGA Championship final round. You know, we try to appeal to guys in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Target demo of shows like this on the stations you're listening to. People that fall into that bracket love Game of Thrones. Love it. So I'm going to bounce that around in my head while I'm listening to the update. How does one character get to minus 500 tonight? Minus 450 if it's still on the board. A 2-9 favorite to win this thing. When, I don't know, I've been watching every episode. I don't really see the clues adding up to that. But maybe you know better than me. 855-212-4227. You can follow me on Twitter at CBS Sports Radio. I'm at the Pony Express. Pony spelled P-O-N-I.
This is the Pony Express.
And go to CBSSportsRadio.com to find archived podcasts, on-demand content from this show. Listen back to some of our debates and opinions there at CBSSportsRadio.com. I'm all in on Game of Thrones, and tonight's the night. It's the final show. And just based on the ratings for this show and the millions who are watching, the American sports fan right now is also a Game of Thrones fan, and that's why I'm talking about this, because for many of you, you care more about Game of Thrones tonight than you do the Stanley Cup playoffs or the NBA playoffs. I posted a Twitter poll question. You can follow me at the Pony Express, Pony spelled P-O-N-I. When it's all said and done, who sits on the Iron Throne? Bran Stark, Jon Snow, Arya / Sansa Stark, other. And Arya / Sansa Stark, you get 2-for-1 there with the Stark girls, winning at 32%. Bran Stark coming in at 17%, the lowest percentage of Game of Thrones viewers who have answered this poll question at just 17%. Bran Stark, a.k.a. the Three-Eyed Raven, checking in. Now, here is why that is significant. Because according to oddsmakers, Bran Stark is minus 450 to sit on the Iron Throne. To put that in perspective, the Golden State Warriors are minus 230 to win the NBA championship. So oddsmakers who are not in the business of being wrong about things think there's a better chance the Warriors get beat in the NBA playoffs. There's a better chance of that than say, Jon Snow or Tyrion Lannister or Daenerys sitting on the Iron Throne tonight. And there are storylines in any show that are telegraphed and you can see coming for a mile away. But this is not one of them. And so this is a gigantic spoiler for me. I can't look at these odds and not think that, frankly, it takes some of the suspense out of the show, because I can't imagine Vegas being this wrong. Tom, who's producing in New York this afternoon, is also a huge Game of Thrones fan. Tom, am I missing something? Have they, in your opinion, have the show writers set things up to end this way? Is it obvious, if you've been paying attention, that Bran Stark is going to sit on the Iron Throne?
It is not. It's possible to believe because his ability to see all of the past and parts of the future theoretically gives him the ability to manipulate everybody else. It's unclear that he has any desires left, though, personally, much less the desire to rule the entire realm. So that seems
he doesn't even
unlikely.
Call himself Bran Stark.
Right. It's a weird thing. The other aspect of it, and you kind of sniffed it out, you were just alluding to it, there have been leaks. Rampant leaks about what happens at the end here. I don't know if they're real or not, and I've done everything I can to avoid them, so I don't know what they are, but I would have to assume, based on the odds that you've read, that's what the leaks are saying, which is a little bit unfortunate. Also, the only other part of this is that he's the last main character whose arc is basically completely unresolved still. Like, why did we do this whole journey with him? Why does he have these powers? He was ended up being only bait for the Night King, and he didn't really help them after that at all. Hasn't helped
he
them
wasn't
at all.
In, he didn't in last week's
no.
Unbelievably compelling episode, he didn't make one single appearance, unless you think he was that
horse.
White horse
yeah.
at the end of the episode.
It's possible, but I actually don't, but it's possible. But he didn't even, it's not even like we saw him counseling Sansa up at Winterfell either.
Okay,
he's just
so
completely out of it.
If we're going to take the odds makers at their word that he is a gigantic favorite, Bran Stark, to sit on the Iron Throne at the end of this TV show tonight,
right?
What's your theory or prediction on how he gets there?
Some form of Jon has to betray and or slay Daenerys and then has to self-exile north, or just does self-exile north and leaves it open. Arya hasn't wanted it. I think she wants to explore actually further west. Sansa stays in Winterfell because it's her family home, and that leaves the opportunity for Bran to take it. I don't know how he gets down there or why, but that's how I would assume.
Yeah, how does he even get to King's Landing? He's in a wheelchair.
I don't know. It would be a long trip at this stage.
I know they've sped things up and they've, you know, they've gone from point A to point B this season faster. You know, all matters of time and space on this show have gone completely out the window in this last season. And for diehards of this show, the people that, you know, study it and break it down like it's the Super Bowl, have gone nuts because just from a timing standpoint, some of these things do not line up at all. But getting him down there in time to sit on the Iron Throne by the end of the show doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. The only thing I can think of here is that the moral of this story is this, that with all the politics and because mankind, because the human race, we individually, at the end of the day, are always thinking about ourselves and we're always doing what's best for us, that what's going to happen here is that the main characters all kill each other. And that there's a lot of backstabbing in this last episode. And, you know, they're basically doing the proverbial push your mom in front of a bus to get to the top kind of thing. And everybody's got their own ambition. That it ends up leading to all of them going down. And by default, he's the last man standing. That's the best I can come up with. That there's so much, you know, you betrayed me, I want this more than you, I'm working back channels to get on top over you, I need to kill you off to get there. That so much of that goes on that he's the only guy left. That's the best I can come up with. If I did not see the spoiler, if I did not see the odds being what they are for this, because I was thinking about it, if I just independently went about trying to make a prediction for tonight's series finale, my gut would have told me that a lot of people think Jon Snow is going to kill Daenerys. I think Tyrion's going to kill her. Because I think that, you know, a lot of what's going on in the show is that history repeats itself. What goes around comes around. That, you know, time is kind of circular here. And so I think if I didn't know about the odds on Bran, I would, and maybe this still happens, I would have guessed that Tyrion, like his brother Jaime, Jaime killed the Mad King, and now he's going to take it upon himself to kill the Mad Queen. That he thinks that's now his destiny, that's now why he's here in the first place. He bet and lost. He bet on her. He was wrong. And now, like a Lannister, he's going to pay his bets in by knocking her off. But once he does that, I don't know what that resolves. I don't know what that does. If it happens that way, I think Tyrion is going to push for Sansa to get on top. Don't you, Tom? I think they've foreshadowed that a little bit.
Totally. I mean, he could even repropose again, try to actually marry her yet again, bring her back down to King's Landing that way.
For a while here, because I've been studying these odds pretty much every week, and Bran was always up there, but he was never this big of a favorite. Gendry has always kind of been lurking. This is a character that really has been in and out of the show, that gets down with Arya in the first episode in a very bizarre, kind of grotesque, you know, this show is titillated, but that was not one of those scenes for me. He proposes his love to Arya. She rejects him. Is he going to get himself back in the mix tonight? And my thing is, the way they left that, that was either a way of kind of ending his storyline. He's done. He's written out of the show. Or we see him get back here and say, you know, I feel jaded now. You let me down. Is he going to take her out because he's gone kind of crazy with love and lust, and if she's not going to kind of reward him and show him the affection and love he shows her. Is he going to do something crazy tonight? I don't know. Maybe. But I don't know about you. I'm not convinced Arya makes it out of the show alive, are you? Tom?
No.
I think Daenerys is dead woman walking. That would be the big shocker tonight if she somehow makes it out alive. Would you agree?
Totally. I mean, that would mean that the show ends with her running essentially a completely totalitarian rule over the realm.
Yeah, she's not going to back down.
No. That was the whole point of what she did last week. Yes, it was an emotional aspect to it, but I believe there was also a political aspect to it. Even though Benioff and Weiss, the show creators, played that down in the after the show little interview.
What did they say?
They basically just said that she snapped. They used that word. She snapped in the moment when she made the decision to burn everything down, so that there was like no... They didn't say specifically there was no calculating behind it, but she
nothing premeditated.
They used the word snap. I think there's a lot more. I think if she took it peacefully, she would still have to deal with the Johns.
No, that was a strategic move for me, because she realized that all her allies had basically gone away. That
exactly.
A lot of her main people... Her main lieutenants have either died or, you know, they've betrayed her.
Yeah, they're not trustworthy anymore.
And she pretty much said, if I can't rule with love, I got to rule with fear. Damn. And I think that's why she went that route. So to say that she's shocked either tells me that these writers have no clue what they're doing, or that's just they're trying to get people off the obvious scent of this show. So are you going with Bran then in the end? You can't ignore the odds, Tom?
I really think that it makes the most narrative sense for the story for John to wind up having to take it, even though he doesn't want it. So I'll stick there. I've been saying that basically the whole season. But
I think John gets a Ned Stark, and
he doesn't make it either.
I think he gets a Ned Stark moment where the character that everybody grew to love and cherish, and you know, might have been the one common good, somebody that was, you know, at their core a scrupulous person. This show hasn't been around for that person to come out on top.
Absolutely
good guys
not.
Don't finish in first on this show. So, yeah, I think he's done. I think he's dead as a doornail tonight. All right, Tom. Great talk. I can't wait. And to me, look, I mean, you can go, unless you wanted me to break down Blue Sharks here for the last 20 minutes or vent about how my Mets are the laughingstock of baseball. This is the best I got for you today. Or I could give you more Brooks Koepka takes, because we know he's Mr. Excitement, and that golf tournament, I'm sure, is going to have everybody talking tomorrow when it's just a complete... it's just 5 or 6 hours of a coronation. We know that Koepka's going to win, but sadly, he's not a compelling or interesting enough person to hold everybody's attention while blowing out the field. This isn't Secretariat running away with the Belmont. All right. I want to thank everybody who tuned in. We'll be back next Sunday, 10 to 2 Eastern, 7 to 11 Pacific, CBSSportsRadio.com, the podcast there. It's the Pony Express on CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.